Welcome one and all to the Stock Up Podcast, your one-stop shop for stocking up on the information you need to qualify for the Pro Tour. My name's Alex. I'm joined today by my co-host, Jacob Negro. How's it going, Jacob?
Good. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm good. I've been playing lots of Pioneer on Arena. It's actually been pretty fun.
Nice. I have not had to play Pioneer in a while. I guess I played a qualifier weekends, but
okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they ever bring that format back to the Pro Tour level now that they've finally got the official Pioneer on Arena and it's no longer Explorer.
Yeah, definitely is in my interests when it's on Arena a lot more. It's just a lot easier to play Arena than any other client.
I've actually been playing the Mono White Pillow Fort deck
with
Nykthos and the new collecting company for non-creature permanents.
Yep, makes sense.
It's pretty sweet. What about you? You just been jamming standard for the PT?
Yep, pretty much standard. Recently, to start looking into modern, I've been trying to play more modern. My most recent league was with Lantern, actually, because it interested me a little. But
nice. Oh, man, that's a throwback. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Well, so after this upcoming PT, modern season's going to be in full force, and you're going to be playing at the modern PT as well. In fact, I think you're making a run for Worlds. From what I understand, you've queued for all the PTs. What sort of finish do you need if you're going to qualify?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I haven't researched thoroughly, but my understanding is you just need to hit a certain amount of adjusted match points across three PTs. And last year, that number was 42, which I know is like a little nonsensical, but right now, for example, I would think I have 21, and I have two more shots at it. Last Pro Tour, I went 10-6, which is worth 21 of those points, because it's your match points at the Pro Tour minus 9, effectively. So if I have a similar 10-6 finish, I'd probably expect to be there, or even something like a pair of 8-8s. So I feel pretty good about it.
Pair of 8-8 doesn't sound too bad. I mean, people have to remember who haven't played on the Pro Tour. It's a really tough field, so something can easily go wrong. You get a bad draft deck, or maybe your deck choice isn't great, and then all of a sudden the wheels can fall off pretty easily.
Yeah, and the cut to day two is 4-4, and that's really also what could matter. But yeah, also, you know, about a year ago I played Pro Tour Outlaws of Thunder Junction, and I went 6-10. So, you know, an 8-8 is not always guaranteed, even if you make day two.
Well, we will be rooting for you. In the meantime, today's episode, we're going to be doing a modern overview. In the future, like I said, modern season is going to be in full swing, and we're going to be doing deck techs and deep dives on archetypes. But we want to make sure our listeners are caught up on the format, including myself. I have not played a ton of modern recently, and so I'm going to be picking Jacob's brain on the top decks here. I've just got MTG Goldfish pulled up. I'm looking at the modern metagame share by percentage, and I figured we would just start with the top and work our way down. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. So the first deck we have is Boros Energy at 20%, which for modern, I mean, 20% is quite a lot, right?
Yeah, definitely. I would think if you're playing an event, though, you should definitely expect to play against Boros Energy, even if 20% is a little inflated for the online metagame. It's definitely still going to be the most popular deck at any given event, I would guess.
I actually remember looking at this, I mean, just about a week ago, and it seemed like Boros was a bigger share. So, I mean, I'm sure it fluctuates, but it's definitely the most popular deck. So, looking at it, the list, lots of one drops, 4 Guide of Souls, 4 Ocelot Pride, 4 Ragavan. Kind of looks just like a red-white beatdown deck. What's this deck's general strategy?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just a lot of cheap and efficient cards, almost entirely, I guess not almost entirely MH3, but almost entirely Modern Horizon cards, including Goblin Bombardment being printed in a Modern Horizon set. I actually don't even remember if it was the most recent one or not. And I would guess I would categorize it as a Goblin Bombardment deck. It has a lot of fodder. Ocelot Pride can go out of control. Plus, now they have even a couple, one or two Voice of Victory, which pairs very nicely with it. That helps you flip Ajani, which is kind of the payoff. Ajani and Flage, I guess I would say, are the reasons this deck kind of exists the way it does. You know, because you could put Guide and Ocelot in any white deck, but those two cards kind of are why this deck is a Boros deck.
So from what I knew about this deck, I played a bit of Historic before they changed some of the cards to weaken this deck, and it was surprisingly resilient. Like, it didn't necessarily, like, it could kill you fast, but it didn't necessarily play out like a red-white aggro deck. In a lot of ways, it was more of a mid-range deck. The only question I have here is it doesn't really have much disruption, so I think in Modern, with so many combo decks around, that might be a problem.
Yeah, and I would say that's kind of the big dynamic with Modern nowadays, is you have Boros Energy and some decks kind of like Boros Energy, we'll get to the next one, and Prowess in a sec, but where they're just pretty quick clocks, they're pretty resilient themselves, so they're kind of hard, you know, they're kind of hard to stop in any traditional sense. They're kind of asking you to just end the game before they can. And then from there, you know, just they don't need a lot of disruption to kind of beat the combo decks. But there are certainly a lot of combo decks now, and I would say those combo decks are asking Boros Energy and the like to have at least one piece of disruption per game.
Mostly comes out of the sideboard, probably.
Yeah.
I take it, yeah.
I would say kind of an interesting shared feature across all these lists. In fact, I see Thraben Charm 1.9 copies in 98% of decks right now. This is sort of the main deck catch-all sideboard card I see these decks playing, where, you know, it's kind of a clunky card, especially compared to the rest of the deck, where I think 2 mana to do any of these things is not really a great deal, but you can kind of afford it because the rest of your deck is so sleek, and it gives you a bit of catch-all to, you know, Graveyard, or you can kill an Urza's Saga, or you can kill a Primeval Titan, just stuff like that.
Okay, makes sense. The last question I'll ask, since it's the most popular deck in the format, and I imagine if people are going to play Modern and they think Boros Energy looks cool, which, I mean, it is kind of a cool deck. It's not often you get, like, a red-white mid-range deck, especially in an internal format, doing well. So in that sense, if a lot of people are looking to play it, is this an easy deck to play?
Yeah, I guess I would say so. Though, what I would say the big challenges with this deck might come a little bit in deck building. Honestly, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but, you know, I can't tell you to not play Boros Energy if you want to get into Modern. It's a great deck. And all I would say, kind of how I stated earlier, is you're going to face a lot of combo decks that are going to try to attack you on an axis that your sideboard might not be prepared for. And if you can stay on top of the Modern metagame, or even your local metagame for RCQs, and kind of have an idea of what decks you're going to face, then I think you can generate any matchup to be favorable of Boros if you come prepared for their deck.
Okay, so it's definitely the sort of deck you'll need to be tuning week to week.
Yeah, at least your sideboard. I think, you know, on Magic Online, those things actually move a lot slower than I feel like they should. You know, I've seen Four Molten Rain in the sideboard for a while now, and we're really seeing a lot more combo decks pop up that I think that's not what you want to be doing.
Gotcha. So moving on to the next deck here, we've got Is It Prowess at 10%, which is a big chunk of the Modern game, or the metagame. And just looking at this deck, I mean, sort of looks like the Prowess deck right out of Standard. I guess we've got Dragon Rage Channeler as something different. We've got Expressive Iteration, Mishra's Bauble. Preordain, of course, is a much better blue cantrip that's legal in Modern. But for the most part, I mean, it's Burn Spells, Cantrips, Slick Shot Show Off, and the good old Corey Steel Cutter that everyone's coming to know and love.
Yeah, and I think, you know, first of all, Steel Cutter scales really well in these older formats, especially with Mishra's Bauble and other free spells. You can start attacking with the Monk on turn two. So they're just a lot faster than what you might be used to if you've been seeing it in Standard a lot. And I would say this deck, kind of a lot of what I just said about Boros is true to this deck as well, you know. Steel Cutter and Expressive Iteration give this deck a lot of resiliency. You're not just going to lose to your opponent killing all your creatures every game. And once again, they're not that disruptive, but they're pretty fast. This time, their sideboard, I would say, is a little bit more catch-all, where they have access to stuff like Spell Pierce and Consigned to Memory. So, you know, that's kind of picking certain combo decks they want to beat, but they maybe don't have as many tools as white cards might be able to lend themselves to helping you.
Makes sense. Is this the sort of deck you could see being good going forward? Or is this like a flash in the pan? Because a lot of the times when new cards come out, people will build decks in Modern to play around them if they're good. But it's a tall order to stand up to, you know, all the cards in Magic's past when it comes to Modern.
Yeah, it's a deck that I think, it, you know, getting something like Steel Cutter, I think is a big deal. Because I actually think it did kind of struggle with what I was describing before, where against really removal-heavy decks, you could find yourself kind of threat light. So now you kind of have a completely different access to fight on. And you're an advantage compared to Boros Energy, I would say, is that you can be a bit faster. You know, not that that matters maybe in that matchup particularly, but against combo decks, I think the need for disruption is a little bit lessened, because this deck, especially with Violent Urge, can just win on turn three. It probably can win on turn two with an absurd draw too with multiple mutagenics.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems better against combo decks, if for no other reason than you get cards like Spell Pierce or Consigned to Memory in your sideboard.
That's something, I guess, also to be clear, just taking a step back to Boros Energy, that's another option that Boros Energy can utilize, by the way. They can splash, and we've seen that before.
Okay, that's fair. So in Modern, we use the fetch land, shock land, mana base, obviously, so it's actually pretty easy to splash off of, like, one dual land, and then all your fetches go get them. So if you haven't played a lot of Modern, that's definitely something to keep an eye out for. The next deck we have here is, I can barely tell what I'm looking at. This is Azorius Belcher at 5%. What's this deck's strategy?
Yeah, so you're trying to play the card Golem Char Belcher, and your deck has no actual lands. It's all the MDFCs between Zendikar and Modern Horizons 3, printing those. So like this deck usually actually plays 23 or 24 lands, even though it doesn't look like it. And then it uses cards like Phalagi Archaeologist and Thundertrap Trainer to kind of dig for its pieces, which also, you know, if you're an old-school Magic player, you might have heard the joke that Augur of Bolas lets you rearrange the bottom three cards of your library. This deck does not really miss.
I didn't realize that made me old-school, but I remember that.
Yeah, this deck doesn't really miss on those types of cards, because all their lands, except for four, the Hydroelectric Specimens, are hits. So these cards also hit your land drops, which is pretty unique to this deck. Beyond that, if you look at Temeshi, it might seem like a weird card, but it's used exclusively in combination with Lotus Bloom, which this deck, ideally you want to, you know, suspend early, but they also even play War of Invention, with the only artifacts in the deck being Lotus Bloom and Char Belcher. And Temeshi with Lotus Bloom just generates a lot of mana. Like, it's just a lot more than it looks like, I think. And then on top of that, Lotus Bloom suspended on turn one is just a nice, clean turn four kill, giving you three extra mana to use Char Belcher when you play it on turn four.
Because Temeshi's kind of an odd card, I didn't even know what it did. I mean, I've seen it before, but I don't know what it does, really. I'm going to read it. So it's 2 and a blue, 2/3, legendary creature, Moonfolk Wizard. Whenever one or more non-creature permanents are returned to hand, draw a card. This ability triggers only once each turn. You pay X and white. Return a land you control to its owner's hand. Return target artifact or enchantment card with mana value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. You can only do that as a sorcery. So I assume in a grindy game you could get back a Char Belcher, but obviously the synergy with Lotus Bloom is pretty obvious.
Yeah. It basically means you can pay one mana for each land you have to put Lotus Bloom back into play, which is generating, you know, 2 net mana each time. On top of that, you know, maybe you're short a land drop, so doing that might produce your land to play for turn, and then also, all of your lands are spells. So, sometimes, you know, in a really grindy game, I've seen this deck cast Seagate Restoration after returning some lands to their hand with Lotus Bloom to try to find Char Belcher, which draws even more cards because your land's in your hand.
Nice, sounds pretty sweet. It's got a lot of counter spells, too. I could get behind this deck.
This deck, I guess, is in the category of, you know, it gets to play a lot of counter spells because it's a combo deck. I know that sounds a little bit weird, but when you pressure the game on kind of a weird axis, you're kind of only caring about your combo resolving or not losing, which counter spells just kind of play perfectly for. On top of that, for the most part, they're all free, I guess, 1 mana or free. So, you know, they use Flare of Denial with all these blue creatures. So that's a free counter spell. They use Disrupting Shoal when their entire deck minus 8 artifacts are blue spells of varying mana costs. And notably, you know, compared to Force Negation, both of these cards work on your own turn, so they work to protect your own combo. And then lastly, Spell Snare and Stern Scolding are not that odd to see. Stern Scolding is certainly more in the category of the defensive spell, or defensive spell, just to be a 1 mana play. Spell Snare, you know, actually hits the card counter spell. Also just a 1 mana play, though.
Yeah, so a bit of a spoiler. It's interesting to note a lot of the decks we're going to talk about today, counterspells are not particularly prevalent, even though the card Counterspell, which is a really powerful card, is legal in Modern. The last deck, Izzet Prowess, didn't really have many counterspells. Of course, that's a very proactive deck, but this Belcher deck's one of the only decks that has counterspells in the format.
Yeah, and you know, if you just go back to the first two decks we've seen, counterspells are just kind of at their worst against a deck full of cheap, efficient plays, which are the two most played decks in the format right now. You don't really want to be spending your mana to counter an Ocelot Pride. If you could, oftentimes you're already facing down those types of cards, and you don't want to pass with mana, because then if your opponent just doesn't do something with that mana, or they just have a lot of leeway if they get to the board before you start passing with counter magic.
So as I say that, our next deck is pretty much the only other deck with counterspells. This is Dimir Murktide, which is funny because the list, for those of you keeping pace on MTG Goldfish with us, the list I'm looking at has three Murktide Regents, but it has four Psychic Frogs. So is this really just more of a Psychic Frog deck?
Yeah, so absolutely. Psychic Frog is, I would say, the best card in this deck. I think anybody who's played with or against this deck would tell you the games feel just night and day between when you have a Psychic Frog or not. It makes all of these counter spells feel like they're actually amounting to something. Psychic Frog's really dominating on the battlefield. Protecting it matters a lot. You know, it's a card that can let you draw two cards a turn, but it really is hard to interact with in combat. You know, you play it, and even if your opponent has a large creature, if they're attacking, they're taking some risk that you could block with your frog, discard some cards, and then even if you have something, you know, this list I'm looking at here has three Force of Negation, so they could still have something to protect their frog, and you just chump attacked with your creature. So a lot of the times, you just can't even attack into a frog.
Yeah, that sounds pretty nice. We've also got Orcish Bowmasters. That's pretty much it for the creatures. I mean, Tamiyo, Subtlety's kind of like a counterspell, and then lots of cheap interaction. We also have two copies of Kaito, Bane of Nightmares. What do you think about that card?
Yeah, that's a generically powerful card, and it's pretty nice to have against decks with a lot of removal, I guess, though one of the best removal spells in the format is Galvanic Discharge, which can hit it, so that's not entirely true either, though it still provides value the turn you play it. It has hexproof on your turn. This deck, I would say, is a combo killer, effectively. It's kind of a lot of the combo decks' worst matchup in the format, but the first two decks we talked about, Prowess and Boros, I think are quite favorable against this deck.
Okay. Well, it looks like kind of a fun deck. I can see why people would want to play it, but also pretty straightforward. So next we have Eldrazi Ramp at 5.6%. I'm looking for Tron lands, and I'm not finding them. So this must be a smaller Eldrazi deck. What's the story here?
Yeah, so I mean, ever since Ugin's Labyrinth came out, these decks have started popping up, which encourages you to find various colorless 7-drops to put in your deck. Using Malevolent Rumbles and sometimes Ancient Stirrings for a lot of redundancy. You know, Eldrazi Temple, Ugin's Labyrinth are both really powerful lands when you put these cards in your deck. Sowing Micah Spawn can get Eldrazi Temple, sometimes other lands too. You can see they kind of have a little toolbox of lands to get. Which is just a really powerful card, and I would say this deck is kind of, it's a lot like if you've played Red-Green Valakut or seen those decks from a while ago, where it's just this ramp deck that, it's kind of a iconic ramp deck, I guess, in my mind, where you just develop your mana and you start playing Haymakers and you have some sweepers with Kozilek's Return, or Ugin is kind of a sweeper in this deck too, or Aulis Dust you'll see sometimes as well. Emrakul the Promised End is kind of a nice tool for this deck, surprisingly, because Malevolent Rumble fills your graveyard, Kozilek's Command is multiple types. It's pretty easy to cast Emrakul on turn 4 with this deck. There's even some really crazy draws where I know you can cast it on turn 3 with really good Rumble hits. Or actually, I think there's a draw that doesn't even involve Rumble, which is just a lot of mana acceleration plus Kozilek's Commands on turn 2. But
gotcha. So again, not a ton of interaction here. I guess you can exile people's lands with some draws.
Yeah, so against, you know, the combo decks of the format, Sowing Microspawn and Worldbreaker can potentially come out as early as turn 3, or Sowing Microspawn can come out turn 2, but the exiling a land part on turn 3, to start interacting with your opponent's land and mana, and then Emrakul the Promised End is kind of a card that can defeat combo decks, because you can oftentimes find a way to combo their own deck into defeating themselves. You know, the only one we've hit so far is Belcher, but Belcher can target yourself, for example.
That would be a totally nasty thing to do. I can't help but notice the two Ugin Eye of Storms also. That's a new card from Dragonstorm Tarkir, the new 7-mana Ugin. Seems like a pretty strong card to me. I guess there's not really your typical Tron deck in the top decks of Modern anymore, but it looks
yeah,
good here.
They wave in and out. I see them every now and then. Ugin is certainly really powerful. It's, you know, a new card, so people are still trying it out. The biggest downside of it is, you know, this slot is typically for 7-mana Eldrazi, and Eldrazi Temple means that those Eldrazi are going to cost potentially feeling like 1 or 2 mana left, depending on how many temples you have. And then in addition to that, I would say, you know, you read Ugin, when you cast it, you can exile a permanent to one or more colors, or whenever you cast a color spell, you can do that again. I would say Ugin definitely does an excellent job of keeping all your opponent's spell or permanents with one or more color in check. It probably can often exile 2 or 3 the turn you cast it, if you make mana and cast some more. But there are a lot of decks in Modern where that just doesn't matter, particularly combo decks, where they're just going to, all the permanents that they're going to have pretty much come down the turn you play them, or, you know, they win the same turn they play them. And so, you know, I would say it's definitely a powerful card in this deck, but I wouldn't consider it like a stock piece of the deck.
So I've been considering building a mono deck on Magic Online, and this is one of the ones that's definitely sticking out to me just because looks fun, looks simple. How well positioned do you think it is?
I think it's pretty good. I guess this is like a good example of maybe the difference between Prowess and Boros, where that kind of kill speed comes into effect, because it's a big deal, especially when you're talking about a card like Kozilek's Return, that this deck, I think, makes it to turn 4. And I think it can often stabilize from those spots against both of those decks, but the speed of what you're playing against is what matters most. This is just a deck that I think, you know, the longer the game it is, kind of the better it is for it, but it doesn't require that long of a game. You know, I'm talking about turn 4 kind of being the really good sweet spot for this deck to start playing really powerful things that can just let them stabilize. But, you know, not every Modern deck lets you do that, especially on the draw.
Fair enough. It does look sweet, though. So next we have Amulet Titan. And before I get into this one is also at 5.6%. So I'm just noticing, and this is something that's been true of Modern in the past that's pretty cool if you're new to this format. We have Boros Energy at 20%, Is It Prowess at 10%, and pretty much every other deck is here at around 5%, give or take. So you have a lot of options. I mean, unless you think Is It Prowess and Boros Energy are just the best decks by a lot, which it doesn't seem like you do.
No, I don't think that at all. I think most of the decks we're going to talk about today, I would think, are totally reasonable to get into Modern with, and whatever your style matters a lot. I would say my biggest advice for Modern, though, is if you have the luxury of playing a lot of different decks, that can go a long way, but at the very least, thinking about the deck that you're playing against all these different decks goes a long way, or practicing and just making sure you kind of understand what the other decks in the format can do.
Yeah, so I'm guessing what you mean by this is that it may be good to have your deck that you're really well practiced with, but if you have the luxury to play with the other decks, since there's so many of them, they're trying to do so many different things, you'll have more knowledge when you run into said decks with your deck in the future, because you'll actually know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Both at just kind of a basic level, but also the little, I think a lot of Modern, you know, you see a lot of these decks don't interact with each other very much, but they do have a little bit of interaction, and understanding what's the key moment that I should be looking for to interact, to pass with mana up. You know, you don't want to pass up with your mana too early and not pressure your opponent enough. You don't want to accidentally waste one of your interactive spells on something that actually wasn't that important for your opponent.
Right, and Modern's easily the kind of format where if you're not super familiar with it and you're just playing and your opponent is playing some relatively fringe deck, you don't say Living End or something, you don't really know what's going on, they're cycling creatures into their graveyard, it's easy to let your shields down and then they just, oops, they play their Living End and they beat you. So a more veteran player, even if Living End's a small portion of the field, they would know what that deck's trying to do. So Definitely get what you're saying there. So for our next deck, we've got a deck that's been around for a long time. Teemer, Amulet Titan. So what's this deck's general strategy for people who haven't seen it, Jacob?
Yeah, so the name of the card, Amulet of Vigor, is untapping your tapped permanents when they enter, which in this deck is lands. They also play Spelunking, which does a very similar thing, though they don't work in multiples, whereas Amulet does. You're trying to play, ideally, Primeval Titan, with all this mana you can generate from additional land drops, plus Amulet of Vigor, plus the bounce lands from Ravnica, or Crumbling Vestige, or Lotus Field. They actually have quite a few things that can generate kind of multiple mana the turn you play them if they untap. Or just in general, if you have two amulets and you play any tap land, you're going to get multiple mana out of it. From there, they also nowadays have Scapeshift, which can kind of combo with one amulet or Spelunking and four lands, I believe, of just a kill kind of regardless of what's in your hands by getting a bounce land, Teleria West. I would say this deck is probably one of the hardest decks to pick up in Modern. That being said, there are people, and looking here, you know, Canister streams, has YouTube content. There's probably plenty of other content creators as well. It's a very kind of popular deck for all of its weirdness to it. Dom Harvey is another great resource for this deck. He wrote like a huge guide. So there's a lot of resources out there if you want to learn this deck, but I think there's just a lot to know with this deck. But it's essentially just a combo deck that kind of overlaps with kind of the ramp gameplay I was talking about before, where, you know, you're just going to accumulate all this mana and start having a lot of haymakers and inevitability, which in a sense makes you kind of a hard deck to hate. People often say the only real hate card for this deck are Blood Moon or Blood Moon similar things.
So even in the past, this deck has been notoriously difficult to play. I mean, it's got 32 lands, so it's a pretty different deck than most in Modern. Would you say it's too late to learn Amulet? It's been around for so long.
Yeah, that's kind of the joke I hear, that it's too late to learn Amulet. Yeah, I mean, I think people also kind of have a little bit of a perfectionist view coming to playing Magic, and you can pick up this deck and start winning games immediately. And I would say, you know, another little joke I hear with the card in general is, if you don't lose to your Summoner's Pact every now and then, you're not casting it enough.
You gotta get kind of risky. There's no Cryptic Command really around in Modern. They're not going to be bouncing your lands anymore. That used to be.
The more scary card nowadays is Subtlety, where you pact for something gives you mana, and then it just gets countered for no mana, and you lose.
Yeah. Okay. Well, not for the faint of heart, Amulet Titan. Moving on, we've got Ruby Storm at another deck at 5%. Storm's always been a pretty big part of Modern. This one looks a bit different. It's got Rowl, Monsoon Mage. That's its sort of Goblin Electromancer type card, it looks like, along with Ruby Medallion.
Yeah, so that's right. Actually, I'm a little bit behind. I see a lot of these lists are playing blue now for actual cantrips, which is not what I'm used to. Maybe it was just the first one I clicked on, actually. Blue for sideboard cards or Flame of Venor is a little different. This deck, you know, pretty similar if you've seen kind of the old Gift Storm of the past, where, yeah, you have your cost reducers and Ruby Medallion and Rowl, and a bunch of red spells, and you're kind of winning with Past and Flames and Grapeshot. That's kind of the same as before. They have Wish for kind of some access to their sideboard for other win cons. Sometimes you'll see even only Wish as their only win con in the main deck with a Grapeshot in the sideboard. And I think another kind of nice thing that this deck got is the Surveil lands. I guess the Surveil lands came out before Rowl and Ruby Medallion were Modern, but they're a very important piece of this deck because this deck, a lot of these lists don't really have one drops. You'll maybe see Striker Rich. Like I said, there's some blue lists splashing for the cantrips, but this deck is kind of using the Surveil lands as their one drop a lot of games.
Okay. Yeah, the Surveil lands see a lot of play in Modern nowadays, from what I understand. I mean, they're fetchable fetch lands, remember, so you can just play one or two and have access to them pretty much anytime you want. So if you're ever wondering why your standard dual lands are so expensive, this is kind of why. They see play in lots of formats.
I think that Surveil lands are stronger cards than Shock lands. They're just that good.
They're pretty nice. That, I mean, then they're certainly good together.
Yeah, having the option is obviously what matters most, but
right.
Being able to just fill in spots of your curve with Surveil, it's It's a lot like casting Consider if you've played with the card. Just instead of drawing a card, you have a land on the battlefield.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So, pretty straightforward deck, though, overall. I mean, not much too else to talk about.
Yeah, this is a deck that is really weird because you're going to play with it, and you're going to fizzle, and even you're, like, kind of generating a lot of favorable odds each step of the way, particularly with Rao coin flipping. But you have Rao coin flipping, and you have Rend Resolve, Reckless Impulse, and Glimpse the Unthinkable. So, you know, you kind of have to hit everything, and obviously this deck is very good and it wins a lot, but it does kind of lose to itself a fair amount, where everything kind of went perfect for you, and, you know, you're oftentimes, when you start playing with Rao, you'll realize you win early flips, you don't want to transform him yet, because you want to transform him into 8 loyalty so that you can ult him. That's a very common avenue to victory for this deck. So people who play this deck will always complain. They're like, yeah, I won 4 coin flips in a row with Rao, didn't flip him, and then lost 4 in a row and lost.
It is interesting to have a coin flip card in Magic. They really don't do that very often. I've played a lot of games of Pokemon, and coin flips are pretty heavy there, so I'm not too bothered by it. But it does irk some people to have matches come down to coin flips, and I can understand it. Although, yeah, a lot of games in Magic come down to essentially coin flips. It's not so blatantly obvious. I will say, I know we weren't going to talk about this deck much after I said that, but now I'm thinking, like, well, why were people playing Mono Red before? Is that for speed? And now they've kind of maybe are leaning in the consistency aspect a little bit with the blue, you think?
Well, 1-mana blue cantrips don't do anything with Rao and Ruby Medallion, and like I said, the Surveillance kind of fill that curve. I personally would recommend sticking to just the red cards. I don't think, you know, kind of Reckless Impulse and Rend Resolve are kind of filling those slots in my mind with the combination of Surveillance. It's just a little bit easier on your mana. It's probably less painful. I also think this deck can afford to play as many as 3 colors, with the fact that it's just going to play so many fetches and shocks and Surveillance anyways. This deck, like I said, I've played this deck a fair amount, actually, though it's been a while, but nothing has really changed. It's very fast. It's very good at doing what it's doing. It can really easily win on turn 3. If you're used to Gift Storm, that was pretty common. You could just run out your cost reducer on 2 and win on turn 3. But this deck actually has a lot of turn 2 kills. Even without Strike It Rich, you know, the play of playing one of your 8 rituals into one of your reducers, into another ritual, to kind of start things going, it's pretty straightforward and easy. And the Rao flipping thing is, like, a very common way to suddenly... It basically looks at your top 8 cards for any instance of sorceries and lets you play them for free. So it's... Once you do that, you almost always win.
Okay. So in that sense, the blue probably is slowing it down, because it doesn't have a lot of those cards you mentioned. But, you know, on Goldfish, it's just an example deck list, and in the future, if we ever do deck dives, we'll make sure to get you your Jacob's preferred list here. But for now, this is a decent overview. So next we've got one I'm a bit surprised to see, Domain Zoo, 4.5%.
Yeah, this deck is kind of in a similar category as the first 2 decks we talked about, where it's just a beatdown deck. It's got, I think, a little bit more disruption, with Stubborn Denial and Leyline Binding, you know, kind of hitting anything. And then the really kind of powerful thing this deck can do is with Leyline of the Guild Pact and Scion of Draco. Leyline of the Guild Pact both just gives you Domain with any lands by itself, because all your lands will have every land type. But all of your non-land permanents, being all colors, means that Scion of Draco affects itself and all your other creatures to give them Vigilance, Hexproof, Lifelink, First Strike, and Trample. You know, the Hexproof is the key word there, because a lot of decks just can't really beat that. I guess all of them combined is pretty key. The Lifelinking, Vigilance, First Strike also definitely matters in combination with Hexproof. But yeah, some decks kind of are just stone cold dead to a turn 2 Scion of Draco that has all those abilities already.
Yeah, pretty big creatures. This deck also gets the benefit of having some burn spells for reach, having some counter spells for interaction. It's got Stubborn Denial, the new Spectral Denial, which sounds pretty good. That's the Syncopate type card, but it costs 1 less if you have 4 power creatures.
Yeah, it gives you something to maybe interact with creatures on the stack a little bit more, if that's what matters, stuff like Primeval Titan.
Wild Nacatl in 2025, huh?
Yeah, somehow still one of the better ones. That's probably more being respectful of your mana in a sense, where, you know, there's probably like some stuff like Nethergoyf. Maybe that's a bad example, but there's probably some other creatures that could maybe beat down a little bit harder, but you don't want to be requiring yourself to have the blue or black mana on turn one. You know, even though the modern mana is nice, it's not just free to play five colors in any kind of sequence that you want.
Lately, across my YouTube feed, I've been watching old coverage videos.
I love watching old coverage videos.
Old coverage, old deck text, that sort of thing. One of the more recent ones I watched was, I can't really remember the year, whenever Shards of Alara came in, 2008,
yeah.
Something like that. Wamnacadal was a huge deal, and Zoo was apparently the best deck. But at this Pro Tour that Luis Scott Vargas won, Elves, in full power Elves, was there. The kind that could combo kill you on turn two, or definitely on turn three. And so the Wamnacadal decks did horrible.
Yeah. No, I saw that same video, and I heard even more to add to that video that basically nobody with Wamnacadal even cashed that Pro Tour.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. Well, also a time when information, you know, wasn't so readily available. So the people that found the Elves deck, you know, didn't share it, and it was hard.
Yeah, I heard, you know, both from that video and LSV's perspective after that video that a lot of people played Elves, but calling it the worst kept secret was kind of wrong, because it was the people who knew about it played Elves, and then the rest of the tournament didn't even know it existed for the most part. So it's kind of unfair to call it that. It's more just the people who identified they could play it realized they should play it.
Gotcha. And everyone else was stuck with Wamnacadal.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so next we've got Orzhov Midrange here. I'm assuming this card is centered around, where is it? Ketremos the New Dawn from Aether Drifts. 1 white-black, 4/4. Menace, lifelink, indestructible god. It can't attack or block unless there are 7 or more cards in exile. Whenever 1 or more cards are put into exile from graveyards and or battlefield during your turn, you draw a card and you lose 1 life.
Yeah, so this deck, I guess I would call it almost an anti-creature deck. It has some play against combo, but it's mostly really removal heavy. I see, you know, Fatal Pushes and Solitude Ephemerate. It's really just a Ketremos deck, like you said. You know, you see main deck Relic Regenitus, which is nice against some combo decks, but not all. The other kind of nice thing this deck has going on for it is Overload of the Veilmurk, which you can impend to, you know, mill 4 and raise dead something. And then with Felia or Flickerisp, you can flicker it back into play and kind of skip the fact that you impended it. Getting the ETB again, and now you have a 5/5 ready to attack.
Only 1 Thoughtseize in this person's list is striking to me. So I guess they're really leaning into fighting against the creature meta here.
Yeah, I'm sure that number will bounce around. Thoughtseize, I think, is personally not the strongest card as it used to be. Just a lot of decks have a lot more, like a lot higher card quality overall, which means their draw steps are a lot more powerful than they ever used to be. That being said, it's certainly going to help you against combo. And then also, it uniquely is better against like Belcher than any other deck, because Thoughtseize can take their lands, so you have a lot like greater access of disruption against them. But yeah, and then Ketremos, for those that you don't know, it is really powerful. If you have Relic Progenitus in play, you not only can you draw the extra cards a turn, when you pay the 1 to like exile the relic, if you do it on your own turn, it exiling itself will draw you a card, and then it exiling the graveyards will also draw you a
card. Yeah, that is quite a bit of card draw. People have played this card in standard a bit. Hasn't been too successful. It's better to use the demon enchantment, I think people have realized, for more consistent draws. It is interesting to me how similar some of the archetypes in Modern are to Standard decks right now. I mean, obviously, this deck has a lot of different cards than the white-black deck in Standard, but the game plan is relatively similar.
Yeah, I would agree. It's kind of just, it's what you'd expect out of a white-black deck, I guess. That's just going to have a lot of removal.
What else are you going
to
do?
And it's trying its best to pressure its opponent, but it's certainly going to be a little bit slower.
Mid-range pile.
Yeah, you see the white Orchid Phantoms combined with Flickering them can be effective against a lot of, you know, not only were some of the combo decks we've talked about so far big mana decks, but also the Charbelcher deck doesn't have basics to get. So that's definitely its biggest tool against those types of decks.
Next up at 2.7%, we have Affinity.
Yeah, I'm going to guess these lists are going to be kind of all over the place.
Okay.
I would say the key port is Mox Opal is a really broken card, recently unbanned. Emry is, I think, personally my favorite payoff to playing with Mox Opal in Modern, because since when Mox Opal was first banned, I think there was a lot less disruption. You know, Karn the Great Creator, Force of Vigor, those weren't even cards yet. Collector Oof, not that that one even sees much play. I guess it does a little. And Emry is just really nice because it's a payoff for artifacts that your opponent kind of just has to kill with a card that might not kill artifacts. And also against a card like Force of Vigor, it could just let you rebuy artifacts. So it's a payoff that's really good against how people typically try to stop you. Tamiyo is an artifact generating card that's just generically powerful. And then from there, I think people have different payoffs. This list I'm seeing has Kappa Cannoneer and Thought Monitor, but I've seen you can play Jeskai Ascendancy, which combos with Emry and zero mana artifacts to kind of go infinite. I've seen these decks include Story or Cori Steelcutter now because they're just it's an artifact. They're full of cheap spells. They're really good at triggering it over and over again. I think it's really flexible, and there's just a lot of different ways this deck can go. But they all, you know, start with a bunch of cheap artifacts and four Opal, four Emry, four Tamiyo, typically.
Gotcha. So still an evolving deck. I mean, Mox Opal just came back, and I guess there was the Breach deck was really broken for a while. So once that got banned, now people are toying around with other things.
Yeah, they're kind of figuring out what the best shell is without Breach.
But you think the blue cards, Emry, Tamiyo, Thoughtcaster are probably the most fundamental parts of the deck? Or
yeah, I mean, I guess all the lists I'm clicking through now have Thoughtcast. It's certainly one of the more powerful payoffs when you're already playing blue, and then Metallic Rebuke also is pretty nice disruption. But yeah, I think, you know, turn one Emry, you know, it's funny how long ago when Emry came out in Throne of Eldraine that was immediately a powerful thing to do in Modern. I still think it's basically the best payoff in Modern for Opal. It's just immediate. It's, you know, it costs one. It's a one mana creature that threatens to basically draw an extra card every turn, which, you know, your opponent's best case scenario against it is typically to kill it for one mana. So you're not really down much on the exchange.
How well does this deck do in sideboarder games these days? Usually a pretty big handicap to playing Affinity is the efficiency of sideboard cards against artifacts in Modern.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, like, the Stony Silence type effects that exist in Modern, which there are a lot of. There's even a new one in Clarion Conqueror, which I guess also stops Emry. And Tamiyo. Is, I think, going to be pretty effective against this deck. They're probably looking at their own sideboard cards and removal spells for whatever they might be against that could stop them. On top of that, you know, I would say if they're undisrupted, their game plan is probably pretty powerful to beat a lot of things, but they're not. It's weird to say they're not the fastest deck, but I'd also say they're kind of in that category of, I'd guess around turn four or later is when they're winning a lot of games. I'm sure they have some ways of winning faster than that, especially if you start activating Urza Saga on turn two from a turn one playing of it, but it's not as fast as the fastest decks.
Only 3%, though. Are people really putting Stony Silence in their sideboards?
I'm curious. I've seen some Clarion Conquerors out of Boros Energy every now and then, which is kind of just
okay.
Maybe hits even more decks, so they feel a little bit more comfortable doing that.
That's the new dragon, 3-mana, 3/3 flying, shuts off. It's kind of like Linvala and Stony Silence in one.
It also stops Planeswalkers, but yeah.
And hit Planeswalkers.
I guess the Planeswalker part is maybe sometimes a detriment because of their Ajani's in their deck, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, next we've got Mono Green. It says Basking. I guess Basking Broodscale, the Copper Menace that was recently banned. How does this combo work?
Yeah, so you want to equip Blade of the Blood Chief to Basking Broodscale. From there, if a creature dies or you get a counter on the Broodscale from its adaptability or in other means, you kind of have an infinite loop where the Broodscale will get a counter, which generates a Eldrazi spawn, which you can sack for colorless and keep giving it a counter. So that's an infinite mana combo. It also makes your Broodscale infinitely large, so potentially just attacking with it could win you the game. But then it has other ways of winning with infinite mana. The common ones you'll see four of are Glaring Fleshraker, which means now when your spawns enter, you'll start pinging your opponent. Walking Ballista, which, you know, you just pump enough mana into and it wins the game. And Kozilek's Command, which does not have text, that literally wins the game with infinite mana, but you can scry X for your entire deck and then draw either Fleshraker or Walking Ballista. This is one of my favorite decks in Modern.
It looks pretty sweet. I've always been a fan of the combo decks that are also kind of green creature decks, where you just play out creatures and attack your opponent, and sometimes you win.
I would say this deck does not need the combo to win. I would say Glaring Fleshraker is a really messed up card. Combined with Kozilek's Command, it kind of lets you fireball with them. There's a lot of little things going on here. You know, Blade of the Blood Chief, you know, not a card you would normally play in Modern. I'm not saying it's a strong card, but if you equip it to Walking Ballista, you kind of assemble the ability to mow down a lot of creatures. Anytime you kill a one toughness creature with the Ballista, it'll get the counter right back. That's something that could be very effective against Boros Energy, for example.
Also an Ancient Stirrings deck.
I mean, that's Ancient Stirrings and card. Rumble and Saga. Yeah. I would say it's like a very redundant deck. The Saga constructs in this deck, you know, those are really only for the slower games. It's mostly a tutor tool. And then the other thing that is pretty normal in decks is one or two copies of Emrakul the Promise End, which you might say that's kind of weird. You know, you see it has Eldrazi Temple, but this deck doesn't have Ugin's Labyrinth, so it's not hitting such a high threshold of mana. But really, it's about the fact that you have the Rumbles and you actually have really good types for Emrakul. Ballista, Command, and Urza's Saga are each cards of two types, and they also have no overlap. So those three cards in your graveyard by themselves, which also all three are cards that go to your graveyard naturally, are six types. So that just gives it kind of a game plan in slower games that can kind of go over the top of things. It's also, I guess, something people have talked about if you play against decks with Karn the Great Creator, which seems to be at a low point in Modern right now, but that can be kind of annoying for this deck at times.
Just cast in all Emrakul the fairway.
Yeah, and this deck, you know, it's easy to disrupt in the sense that, you know, you mostly just have to be ready to kill the Brood Scale at times, but it pretty easily wins on turn three with all the redundancy, you know, if you don't try to stop it. So I like this deck a lot. I would say if you did play Nadu in the month that was legal or so, this deck reminds me a lot of Nadu, not in that it's as broken, but just the way the games play out. You're just, you know, very similar. Instead of Shuko, you have Blade. Instead of Nadu, you have Broodscale. And those cards are not as powerful or as Nadu as standalone, but it's just doing a very redundant thing, but also you're playing a lot of creatures, so your opponent has to be at least somewhat respectful that you can just attack them with your creatures.
Makes sense to me. Also sounds like a sweet one. Next, we've got Living End. We're down to 2% here, just a couple more decks to go. This is another deck that's been around for a long time. It's got a lot of different cards in it, but I assume the strategy is the same. Could you lay that out for us?
Yeah, so you try to cycle a bunch of creatures of cycling that cost 3 or more mana because you're trying to cast Shardless Agent or Ardent Plea, and Cascade into Living End, which is your only hit, which will get rid of all the creatures in play and bring back all the creatures from graveyards to the battlefield. This deck also features, kind of like some other combo decks, I guess Belcher is the one that reminds me of it. It typically features 4 Force of Negation and 4 Subtlety, which is some free interaction, kind of allowing it to utilize its plethora of blue cards. Subtlety also is a creature that goes to your graveyard. It's not uncommon now to see main deck Endurance, just because it kind of has a lot of green cards. You'd think that doesn't make a lot of sense, but you are reanimating both players' graveyards, so Endurance actually stops a lot of weird shenanigans, like, for example, Goblin Bombardment, from, like, kind of making your plan a lot harder.
So this deck, I've always felt pretty strange about this deck. Like, I thought for a long time that it wasn't good, and here it is, outlasting many, many decks in Modern that I would have thought were definitely better decks than this. And I'm not seeing any huge innovation, so it's interesting to me that this is still a deck.
Yeah, it does its thing really consistently. So I've played a lot of this deck before Violent Outburst was banned, and even a fair amount. I have not played it since Grief has been banned. I kind of considered Grief a very fundamental card of the old decks. As you could imagine, evoking Grief, looking at your opponent's hand, taking a card, and then eventually Living Ending back, including that Grief, was very strong, and it kind of cleared the way. Specifically, this deck, both without Grief and Violent Outburst, is softer to counter magic than it ever had been. You know, you see this deck has Force of Negation, that's not really protecting your own combo, because both your Cascaders operate at sorcery speed. Before, that card interacted very nicely with Violent Outburst. But yeah, now I'd say it's a bit more in the category of like a meta call, where it's the fact that people aren't very hateful for you and you see a lot of creature decks. And this deck's very nice against creature decks because your combo is wrathing their board. So you kind of stabilize and then threaten to kill your opponent all in one swoop. You were saying, you know, it's always kind of looked like it wasn't that good for a while. I guess I would say that was a pretty common perception. Though since Lord of the Rings, with the printing of Generous Ent and then the other land cyclers, I would say this deck was one of the best decks in Modern up until the Violent Outburst deck, and oftentimes the best deck in Modern. I actually played it myself at an RC to re-qualify for the Pro Tour over a year ago now.
Okay, so you're saying cards like Generous Ent actually make a pretty big difference, and even though it's a little bit innocuous, just having the one colorless search for a forest is pretty powerful.
This deck, I think, used to play 18 or 19 lands, and you just were cycling into your lands, and you know, because it needed this high density of things. And ever since Generous Ent, and now, you know, we see Sink into Super too, but since Generous Ent, seeing, honestly, this deck's a lot lower. I used to play what I would say is like 22 lands if you counted these land cyclers as lands. But the reality is like you're playing 6 to 8 copies of these land cyclers that, first of all, they're like the largest creatures in your deck, at least for one mana. And that matters. When you play a lot of this deck, you'll notice like the amount of power you put into play on your Living End. Sometimes it's comically large and it doesn't matter at all. But sometimes you do a turn 3 Living End, and the fact that you have 10 power instead of 7 is, you know, a turn off the clock to win the game.
Did your deck have Grief that when you were playing it and you thought it was really good?
Yeah. Okay. Back then it had Grief. That was super important. And, also, the printing.
Instant speed.
Yep. It's the speed Cascader. Yeah. It used to be a Teemer deck instead of Bant. Okay. There was even a point in time this deck had Fury. Yeah, it's had a lot of bans. It's, like I said, it's still very good at doing its thing, but it's a bit easier to disrupt. Also, I talk about disruption in regards to this deck. I actually think Graveyard Hate is not exactly the way you want to go against this deck. I'm not saying it's the worst thing, but Counterspells are a little bit more effective, especially now that those cards have been banned, and specifically Consigned to Memory is kind of a nightmare for this deck, because it can counter triggered abilities, which is what Cascade is, and you can replicate it, so it's even hard for them to fight over.
So Consigned to Memory is a card I've been seeing a lot in these sideboards. I think I'm going to go ahead and read it for the listeners. Let me pull it up here. 1 blue instant, replicate 1, so you can pay 1 any number of times to essentially copy this spell, and you counter target triggered spell or colorless spell. So this must be a key card in Modern. I mean, I'm seeing it all over.
Yeah, I think it might. It's often the most played card in Modern, actually, by quantity.
Wow.
Just because so many sideboards are all 4. You'll even see some people main decking it in various strategies. Yeah, so, you know, we talked about so far what? Affinity, Broodscale, Eldrazi. Those are decks with lots of colorless spells. Belcher, their key win con is a colorless spell. Living End has a key triggered ability. It's pretty good at fighting a lot of decks in Modern, and, you know, it's only a 1-mana instant, so it trades very well. It's worded in a way to both be hard. You know, the Belcher deck wants to fight with counter backup. Well, that's hard to do against Replicate, because Replicate just happens when they cast it. And then the Eldrazi Ramp deck is trying to overwhelm you with these triggered abilities, but it covers you on both. So you can counter Emrakul and the triggered ability of Emrakul, for example.
Yeah, it definitely sounds pretty useful. So, next here, along one of our last decks, we've got one of the most ridiculous combo decks I've ever seen. If you thought Living End was ridiculous, this deck is even more ridiculous. We've got Neobrand. What's the strategy of this deck, Jacob?
Yeah, so I've kind of been witnessing a little bit of the development of this deck, and the joke of this deck is people are calling it fair Neobrand, which is certainly, you know, the discussion of whether a deck's fair or unfair is a little bit nonsense to begin with, but calling this deck fair is mostly stemming from the fact that this deck used to play cards like Nourishing Shoal and maybe even Endurances trying to target themselves, and they would try to... You're trying to play Allosaurus Rider for 0 mana and then Neoform it or Eldritch Evolution it into something large, Gristlebrands being kind of the iconic target. And then, you know, previously this deck was trying to win the game the same turn it put Gristlebrand into play, but there's just kind of been developments. I think mostly from the idea stemming from Tristan Wild LaRue, if you know that player, pro player, really great player. And
I don't, but I'm sure some more listeners do.
Yeah. Just that, you know, maybe you don't have to win the game. But then it kind of circled back around because Galta, which you'll see is a staple of this deck, which is kind of silly because it's kind of reads like a commander card, is a 8 mana 12/12 trample. When it enters, you can put any number of creatures from your hand onto the battlefield. Is actually a pretty useful card for this deck to have because anytime you achieve that combo with one of your other strong cards in your hand, you might as well get Galta, and then you just have both. But then there was a realization that with Galta, if you had a Pact of Negation in your hand or Xenagos itself, you could put in Xenagos, God of Revels, and give your Galta plus 12 or plus 13, depending on if you cast Neoform or Eldritch Evolution, power and trample in haste. Actually, it doesn't give trample. Galta has trample. So now this deck is just back to being able to win on turn 2.
Should have just called this deck turn 2 Dinosaur Tribal.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Although Allosaurus Rider is not a dinosaur, even though the art is prominently a dinosaur.
Oh, it's clearly but it's talking about the rider.
Yeah,
so he just happened
the
to
name
a dinosaur
clues
in
you
art.
In, but yeah, it's
yeah, a bummer.
A little weird. I would say the strength of this deck is that it can win on turn 2, and it does a lot. I think people question the consistency of this deck, and I'm sure there's lots of games where this deck does nothing, and it looks embarrassing. But all I can say is I see this deck winning a lot, and this deck doesn't do very much besides try to win on turn 2. So it must be winning on turn 2 at a pretty good rate.
Yeah, winning on turn 2 is pretty absurd. You could probably tell how much it's winning on turn 2 based on its percentage in the metagame, because obviously if it was winning on turn 2 a lot, it would be the best deck. Is it resilient to hate at all, or is can
it's
one
pretty low on it
break everything?
Yeah, so I mean, it I would say, you know, like Subtlety is maybe one of the best cards against this deck. You know, you can Subtlety an Allosaurus Rider. I think the point of interacting against this deck that's tough is that it's so fast that, you know, if you're on the draw against this deck, you have your opening hand and your draw step and one mana to kind of compete, which is certainly doable in Modern. But I would say, you know, if this deck is on your mind, you should really be considering the fact that, you know, a 2-mana or more sideboard card against this deck, I would say, is not really what you're interested in.
I'd bet the proper way for the match to go when this deck is involved is for both players to take a lot of mulligans, or an above-average amount of mulligans.
Well, this deck, an issue with it, actually, is that it does not mulligan very well, because Allosaurus Rider needs you to have 2 green cards in your hand.
Okay.
So you're kind of on looking at 7 or 6 cards, I think. Once you go to 5, I think things get really dicey.
Okay.
But, you know, it's also a deck featuring the Survey of Lands as kind of its turn 1. We see some copies of Preordain. Sometimes you see Glittering Wish. I think that's kind of creeping up in popularity, which is a little bit slower. But you Glittering Wish for Neoform, so that gives you more copies of kind of your most important card. Because finding Rider is pretty easy between Summoner's Pact and Eladamri's Call. But finding Neoform, and obviously Eldritch Evolution is a backup, but I already mentioned this deck's really resource intensive with needing to pitch 2 green cards, so a 3rd land is just an entire extra resource. It's also an entire extra turn that your opponent has to assemble something that stops you.
That is definitely a pretty big strike against the deck. A lot of combo decks can mulligan relatively low and still win. Although I imagine, if you're playing against this deck, you might still be mulliganing a lot, so you can get that turn 1 mana counter, or turn 1 Thoughtseize, or...
Yeah, I would say playing against this deck, mulliganing is probably going to be a thing that's... Like, I agree with you on that half of the equation. Also, kind of a cute thing this deck can do with Galta is you'll see in the mana base, I guess, there's Disciple of Fraelis, which is a land they play because it's green. It's also, I guess, a land you can pact for if you are desperate for your second lands to try to win. If you have Galta in hand and you put another Galta into play with Neoform, then like you can put in both Galta and Disciple of Fraelis and then stack it so that you sack your original... You won't keep either Galta by the end of this, but you'll draw 13 cards, gain 13 life, and still have a Galta trigger on the stack to put any number of creatures from your hand in the...
Okay. So we've got... we're getting pretty low on the percentage here. We'll do one more deck. Listed here is Abzan Combo. But really, I assume this is the Yawgmoth Thran Physician deck, which I have seen throughout the last few years be quite popular. What's this deck's deal?
Yeah, so I mean, Yawgmoth, you know, is a card that is asking you for a lot of creatures in play to kind of convert them into board presence and more cards in your hand. And then from there, there's a lot of combos that can be assembled, typically with creatures with Undying. So Young Wolf is kind of the premier one. Because you can, if you had two Young Wolves, for example, you can sack one, it comes back as a 2/2, and then you can sack the other one and put a -1/-1 counter on the first one, and the other one comes back as a 2/2, but the other one's back to having no counters on it. So you can pay a life and draw a card as much as you'd like. From there, if you had a Blood Artist in play, for example, then you would start draining your opponent. This list we're looking at specifically doesn't actually have that. They seem a little bit more focused on the Samwise combo, which involves sacking your Cauldron Familiar with having a sack outlet, a Samwise, and a Cauldron Familiar results in a win because you can keep sacking the Cauldron Familiar, and each time it enters, you get a food, which later lets you return it.
Kind of like this deck, and it's for a reason that might not make sense because it's the card that I would like to put in it is not in the deck, and that's Birthing Pod.
Yeah, I see some people have Birthing Ritual, which is kind of, you know, referencing Birthing Pod. Actually, you know, I used to be really low on this deck until I played Nadu at the Pro Tour, which I know is weird to say this makes this deck better, but I used to kind of think about Modern as, like, this deck looking kind of clunky, and that kind of showed that I had not played enough Court of Calling, because Court of Calling in decks like this is often a zero-mana spell that is really unique and powerful. And so this deck, I would say kind of the broken thing that this deck and decks like this is doing is actually casting Court of Calling for zero mana and somehow putting a 3 or 4 mana creature into play.
Yeah, I've definitely had good experiences with this sort of deck and Court of Calling as well. I've even played a deck similar to this in Historic on Arena. But I'd like my Court of Calling decks to also have Birthing Pod. That's all I'm saying. So Wizards, you know, if you could give us Birthing Pod Bad Monitor. Is it really going to be that broken? I don't think so. I really don't think so. What do you think? Could they do Birthing Pod in Modern?
I don't think it would be that broken, actually, either, but it's probably... I think I've always said there's probably a strong Birthing Pod deck, and it probably is really boring and probably has Omnath and Solitude or something and doesn't actually look like this.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. That doesn't sound as interesting, but in my head, it sounded more interesting. Well, that's going to do it for now, folks. That should be a simple overview. Like I said, the next few episodes we're going to be doing a more in-depth dive on each deck, but for now that'll get us started, get us caught up. I in particular am kind of interested in Eldrazi Ramp. Sounds pretty fun. What do you have a personal favorite deck of the ones we've gone over?
My favorite to play is definitely Broodscale. I would say, you know, the decks are that I kind of enjoy playing. I've enjoyed playing Eldrazi Ramp before. I haven't played it since the One Ring got banned. It used to be a ring deck as well. Living End has a good place in my heart because I played it for like 9 months straight and felt like I won every tournament I entered with it, effectively. and then Belcher is my vote, I guess, for the deck that I think, you know, if you kind of want to do something kind of unique and powerful in Modern, and that you think would be well-positioned, my vote would be for Belcher being the well-positioned deck currently in Modern to play. But also, I always kind of underrate Boros Energy. I know it's really powerful. Like I said, as long as your sideboard cards are on point from week to week, I think you're not going to go wrong with it. Keep in mind that that kind of does include the blue splash, or even sometimes we've seen the black splash for stuff like discard spells and Bowmaster if they're particularly well positioned too.
Well, I know in Modern past, it's always been true that if you pick a deck you like and it's one of the top decks, you know, one of the many top decks, and you know it very well, you could always do well with that. So if any of these decks look interesting, I'm sure they'd all be pretty competitive in the right hands. I don't know if there's any in particular you think are really stinkers that have are played too much.
Yeah, sure. I would shout out to Dimir Murktide being a real stinker. It's only good against the decks I like to play. Yeah, it's only good against decks I like to play, and it's not good against half the field. So that's
Okay. Well, depending where you're listening to us, you can find us on YouTube and all the other podcast platforms. We do have a Patreon that we're going to have linked below. At the moment, everything is going to be free. Obviously, our podcast just started, so we're not going to have much on there now. But in the future, we plan on doing, Jacob in particular is going to be doing sideboard guides and deck lists and that sort of thing when we do deep dives on particular decks. So definitely check it out, especially since it's free. And that's it for now. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
So how do you feel about sign-offs, Jacob? Do you know what that is?
Sort of. I know LR used to do little stories, right?
Yeah. And it's honestly, some other podcasts I listen to do it, and it's honestly some of my favorite parts of the podcast is getting to the end. Like, even if I'm not going to listen to a podcast of like LR, sometimes I'll just skip to the end. And
gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sign-off.
Yeah.
So I want to tell you a couple funny things about my experience with Pioneer on Arena.
Yeah.
So one funny thing is I really love Meringue River Regent from the new set. And I think it's a pretty strong card. It's probably worse than Memory Deluge, but I was going to try it anyways. So I went to build the deck knowing that it's now Pioneer and not Explorer anymore. So assuming that all the cards were legal. And I filled my deck with some dragons, Meringue River Regent. I think I had like the old Ojutai. And then I was going to play the old blue counterspell.
I was going to guess, Selumgar Scorn. Yep.
In mixture with the new one, which is Dispelling Exhale, the more like Mana League-esque one, just to have, you know, some hard counters in the late game. And I looked for Selumgar Scorn in every way possible, and it is not on Arena.
That's really funny. Yeah, my understanding is if you could, like, top 8 a challenge or 5-0 a league with Selumgar Scorn, they're going to be obligated to put it on Arena in the near future. That's their kind of bar. So
what you're telling me is I need to get on Magic Align and
this if one of our listeners wants to do you a favor, you know.
Put Selumgar Scorn in a deck in 5-0 league. You can 5-0 league with anything these days.
Definitely.
Yeah. The other funny thing that happened to me is I was playing this mono white deck, and I bought this bundle of snow covered lands, and I have these really beautiful snow covered plains, full art, with an owl on it. And so I filled my deck with all those, and I figured, I was like, I can't think of anything that would hurt me for having snow. It's no big deal. And just the other day, I played against a white-black Minry deck that played Redain on turn 3. I think it's what it's called.
Yeah, Redain is this. Yeah, that card. I remember a lot of the, when that card was standard legal, because of Faceless Haven, for the most part, there was a lot of monocolor aggro decks that played all snowlands. So that came up actually a fair amount while that card was legal, even though it is definitely aimed a bit more at being a combo hater or expensive spell hater.
I just want to say, I think I was right in thinking that there's no good cards that punish you for every snow lands, because I beat them anyways with all my lands coming into play tapped.
Isn't it like a 3-mana 2/3 flyer? That's not that good of a card. Yeah, it's exactly. Pretty slow. And
Vigilance, I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Just play my lands tapped, it's cool.